This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. I'm Evan Wasuka. Coming up, one of the world's biggest mining companies makes a return to Bougainville, to a site of a civil war and environmental damage.
What mining has done to myself and my people is completely unfair and it's destructive.
Wet weather warning ahead as Pacific businesses brace for another round of La Nina weather.
We already did like all our shelves up so that we can move our things up. So it's all like when we know it's flooding, then all afternoon we have to get all our things up on the shelves.
And a look at how an island is emerging out of the waves in Tonga.
As long as it's allowed to erupt normally, it shouldn't be too dangerous, but there's always this potential for explosions with the contact with the water.
For the first time in 33 years, mining giant Rio Tinto has returned to Bougainville, where one of its most controversial mines sparked a bloody civil war. Conflict over Panguna mine led to 10 years of civil unrest in the 1990s, claiming more than 20,000 lives. As Marianne Farr reports, locals continue to live with painful memories and the major environmental damage caused by the mine.
After more than three decades, came a chance to air grievances.
We have our painful experiences, yes, but there is no healing if we are not able to communicate directly to the representatives of that company that was responsible.
A visit by Rio Tinto to the place where it once operated a massive gold and copper mine brought up a mix of emotions for landowners like Theonila Rockamatbob.
The significant thing and a step forward was the fact that we found ourselves in the same room.
An MP in Bougainville's parliament, Ms. Matbob has spent her entire life grappling with the impact of the Panguna mine. In the early 1990s, violent civil unrest linked to the operation forced her family to flee their village just downstream of its location. The decade-long war that ensued claimed her father's life and thousands of others. While peace has been restored in Bougainville and the mine closed, Ms. Matbob continues to feel its impact.
Waking up in a village where there's no tree, no forest, no nothing, and you have very big flowing rivers running just next to your house, but you know for sure that you cannot access it, you cannot even bathe in it, you cannot even swim.
She's among 156 locals calling on Rio Tinto to address environmental damage caused by the mine.
What mining has done to myself and my people is completely unfair and it's destructive.
In 2020, the group filed a human rights complaint against the mining giant, alleging huge volumes of mine pollution were poisoning local water sources, destroying sacred sites, and putting lives at risk. Lawyer and acting CEO of the Human Rights Law Centre, Karen Adams, is representing the community.
You know, you have water that is flowing out of the mine pit, which is a bright, natural bluish-green colour and turns many of the rocks and surrounding rocks in the rivers a bright greenish-blue from all of the copper and other heavy metals.
And with efforts to contain the waste failing, she says more areas are at risk.
This is a mine that was constructed by blowing away half a mountainside and left a billion tonnes of mine waste in the river valley. And you're now seeing a lot of that waste flowing directly into the rivers and causing huge problems further downstream.
Last year, in response to the human rights complaint, Rio Tinto agreed to fund an independent assessment of the mine's impact. An early report completed in April this year identified risks of potential flooding of local river systems linked to the possible failure of a levee at the mine's old pump station. A Rio Tinto spokesman says people's safety is the company's first priority.
Community representatives in Bougainville have been advised of these preliminary findings and the work being undertaken to better understand the risks and mitigations.
Earlier this month, representatives from Rio Tinto visited Bougainville for the first time since the mine closed 33 years ago. They met with complainants, lawyers, and members of the Panguna Impact Assessment Committee. Theonila Rockamatbob, who was at the meeting, says it was an emotional moment.
Even after the meeting itself, there were a lot of ex-combatants that have fought against the company. They were even calling me and then asking, how dare they come back to Bougainville.
But for others, including Ms. Matbob, it was seen as a positive step.
Having the opportunity to directly speak to Rio Tinto's representative is something that I see not as an achievement, but as a progress.
It comes at a time when talks of reopening the Panguna mine are gaining momentum, with Bougainville looking to achieve independence from Papua New Guinea by 2027. But not everyone is ready for that discussion.
I really believe that before Bougainville opens another chapter in terms of creating revenue for economy, we need to settle the core issues that are outstanding and that have never been addressed.
Bougainville politician Theonila Rockamatbob ending that report from Marion Farr. For the first time, Vanuatu's Council of Chiefs will be fielding candidates in next month's snap election. Chiefs say the loss of traditional values, coupled with concerns over China and the sale of passports to foreigners, are the main reasons behind their bid to win parliamentary seats. As Mackenzie Smith reports, the chiefs are also keen to put an end to political upheaval in Vanuatu as part of an ambitious plan to take parliament back.
Mauvutu Māori already has an advisory role over Vanuatu laws involving cultural rights. The Council of Chiefs is made up of traditional leaders elected by their communities and villages to represent customary rights on a national stage. But fed up with what they see as a democracy in decline, the chiefs want to expand these powers by running for parliament. It's the first time the Council of Chiefs has decided to put forward members in elections. Chief Morris Timataso is running for Epi constituency.
The reason is that the politicians are acting and performing in a mixed culture here in Vanuatu, and more of the traditional values and principles of running a nation. We feel that it's neglected by politicians and if not are forgotten in many areas of running the government. We would like to see that the political government execute the services that the constitution requires.
Chief Timataso is one of 52 candidates the Mauvutu Māori plan to stand in the elections. It's an ambitious plan, and it's unclear whether they will be able to see it through in time for the polls on October 13. The candidates are running under the banner of the existing party, Vanuatu Indigenous Movement. Chief Timataso says one of their main priorities is to establish a Senate similar to Australia's, controlled by the Council of Chiefs, that would have oversight over any laws passed by Parliament. If elected, they plan to put this proposal to referendum. Chief Timataso says Vanuatu's traditions have been ignored in its politics. That's why he's running.
We find that our traditional part of the constitution has not been maintained, and the ownership of the nation, is losing. It's slowly losing its principles.
Another candidate is Chief Masing Willy Apia, who is running for Malekula constituency. He says the chiefs are intent on pushing back against China's influence in politics. One sticking point is a scheme that allows wealthy investors to buy citizenship, which led to the European Commission suspending a visa-free travel agreement with Vanuatu in March.
China is one of the countries that really pushing hard to get a lot of land in Vanuatu, and also selling of the passport to the different country is one of the issues and these present days.
While the Mauvutu Māori's plans are ambitious, observers say the recent political turmoil has left voters discontented with the status quo. Vanuatu was pushed to call a snap election in August, 2 years before schedule, after Parliament was dramatically dissolved. just as a vote of no confidence was being planned against the Prime Minister. Anne Parkwa, Chief Executive of the Vanuatu Human Rights Coalition, says the situation could give the Chiefs critical inroads in their debut campaign.
The general public in general were not happy at all for what happened, in particular the dissolution of Parliament. So everyone's really hoping for a change, and what people want to see is, you know, some good leaders, traditional leaders.
She says the involvement of the Chiefs could make a big impact on Vanuatu politics.
They meet every day to try and plan their campaigns to make sure that they get enough voters for their candidate. And if their candidate wins, this is going to be a big change, especially having the representative of chiefs in parliament.
Parkwa says churches are also putting candidates forward. Vanuatu's 300,000 registered voters go to the polls on October 13.
Mackenzie Smith reporting. Critics of the government in Kiribati say democracy is under serious threat as a result of the ongoing conflict with the country's judiciary. Any attempt by the opposition to bring on a vote of no confidence in the current administration will be blocked as a result of recent changes to the law. And as Marion Farr reports, the pursuit of former High Court Judge David Lamborn is unrelenting.
On Friday morning, a knock at the door brought more bad news for David Lamborn. The Australian national and former Kiribati High Court judge was served his second deportation notice in less than 2 months.
The government of Kiribati has demonstrated its willingness to completely ignore and go against the orders of both the High Court and the Court of Appeal. And so this is just a continuation of their efforts in that regard.
The first attempt to deport Mr. Lamborn from Kiribati came early last month after he was suspended from his role as a High Court judge. The government claimed Mr. Lamborn breached his visa conditions, saying he had total disregard for Kiribati laws. Mr. Lamborn appealed the deportation notice and won.
The Court of Appeal has said that the government cannot deport me, and they also confirmed the order of the Chief Justice that I be issued with an appropriate visa.
But instead, the Kiribati government also suspended all three judges in the Court of Appeal, saying their decision was out of line. The move has effectively left the country without a functioning high-level court system. In an earlier statement, the government of Kiribati said it was committed to ensuring the country's judiciary continues to function, outlining plans to appoint a new acting Chief Justice soon. Justice Lamborn believes democracy is under threat in Kiribati.
As I've said, in my view, their actions are unlawful. The courts have told them their actions are unlawful. For them to declare otherwise is just ridiculous and does not respect the separation of powers and the role of the judiciary in a democratic country such as Kiribati.
He has 17 days left to appeal his second deportation notice.
The appeal goes to the minister, who is the president and who has made his views about my continuing to stay in Kiribati quite plain. I wouldn't have any expectation that we would be given a fair hearing.
Still, he's determined to remain living in Kiribati, where he's married to opposition leader Tessie Lamborn.
I have a deep commitment to the country. My family are all here. I have no other home. And so, as a consequence, I want to stay. I'm deeply frustrated by the government's actions in trying to remove me.
The situation has also frustrated opposition MPs. Lawyer and leader of the Kiribati First Party, Banwara Barina, says he's deeply concerned by the government's recent actions.
The rule of law is being ignored in Kiribati right now.
He wants to move a motion of no confidence against the Kiribati government, but he can't. A law passed in August last year allows just one motion of no confidence to be tabled each parliamentary term. That's every 4 years. Last Friday, a motion to suspend that particular rule was submitted to Parliament, but time to debate the motion ran out. Parliament is not due to sit for another few months, and that's worrying to Mr. Barina.
The very fact that we have a rule prohibiting the motion of no confidence from being moved more than once in 4 years, that is indeed a concern to me.
But not everyone shares his concern. Mr. Barina says the public seemed divided over recent events. He says the government has used social media to claim the suspended judges were biased.
We have quite a number of people that are accepting the message from the government, that the government is protecting them from these foreigners who are trying to protect each other.
That's a claim Justice David Lambourne denies. But while his fate hangs in the balance, one thing remains clear.
I'm determined to stay here for as long as possible, and if at any point they succeed in removing me by force, then I will continue fighting until I can come back. This is home.
Former High Court Judge David Lambourne, and the reporter there was Marion Farr. Increased rainfall and prolonged periods of drought will likely affect parts of the Pacific in coming months thanks to a third straight La Nina event. It's come as bad news for people living in low-lying areas, many of which are still recovering from floods at the start of the year. Bar Town in Fiji's west flooded twice in a fortnight due to heavy rainfall in January. And less than 12 months on, locals are again bracing for the worst. Kyle Evans with this report.
Flooding is common in many parts of the Pacific, but in the Fiji town of Bar, it's a way of life. The town was submerged twice in a fortnight after heavy rain burst the Bar River's banks back in January. Now locals are bracing for a wet summer again, with a third straight La Nina expected to bring wet weather to parts of the Pacific. Restaurant owner Kamal Naidu says they are already preparing.
We already did like all our shelves up so that we can move our things up, because I'm owning a restaurant in town, so I have tables and chairs. So it's all like when we know it's flooding, then all afternoon we have to get all our things up on the shelves, tie up the fridge and everything.
Miss Naidu watched helplessly as 2 feet of water inundated her restaurant at the start of the year. She said the town lost power and 6 of her staff were left out of work.
All the table and chairs got damaged and everything like that. We have to close the business until we, and if it's flooded, then sometimes no water facilities are available, even the power. It's same situations now and then every time.
Many nearby businesses experience similar hardships. Nehe, who is a senior chef at the Bartown Coffee Hub, says it took 6 months for her business to recover. She says even her home was affected.
You know, our freezers and coolers were like sending coolers. Now, at home, like we lost. So many chickens and all farm side, and we lost our vegetables.
The La Nina is an atmospheric weather pattern which shifts warm water to the western end of the Pacific. Meteorology and climatology advisor Celeste Nimi says western Pacific countries like Fiji and Vanuatu will experience increased rainfall, while countries closer to the equator could see drought.
It will really have an impact on some of the Pacific islands. Last few months, Kiribati declared a state of emergency because of below average rainfall. Now, with this declaration of another possible La Nina or La Nina coming, they will continue to experience those below rainfall, because all the rain that they would usually get during this time of the year will be all distributed to the Western Pacific. And similarly, those countries in the Western Pacific will have to be very careful in terms of, you know, when there is a low pressure system or a tropical cyclone, because we are now heading into cyclone season. This can easily create a flooding event in the wet season.
Mr. Nimi says multiple La Nina events have occurred before and are part of the natural weather system, but it's important people are prepared.
For some countries, it might need probably a low-pressure system to trigger, you know, high rainfall. For others, they will probably be experiencing slowly the low below average rainfall, which over a period of time, say 3 to 4 months, if they are entirely dependent on rainwater, then they will be experiencing shortage of water. So rather than wait to see the impact of the La Nina, it is best to, you know, to contact the national agency, National Disaster Management Offices, to start getting yourself prepared.
Ms. Nehe says her business is taking measures to withstand the flooding, but she worries what the La Nina will bring.
We'll try our best, like we are like following the news. We're also giving ideas to each other, and like this is a flat town we are living in, so most of the business people, they are affected. We are really worried.
That was Nehe, a senior chef at Bar Town Coffee Hub, ending that report by Kyle Evans. The latest underwater volcanic activity in Tonga has led to the formation of an island that appears to be growing bigger every day based on satellite imagery. The island is the latest incarnation of Home Reef, which has been built up and eroded by a succession of volcanic eruptions since the mid-19th century. But Professor Scott Bryan from Queensland University of Technology says this time the island could be there to stay.
Home Reef has been trying to build an island and be permanently above sea level for a couple hundred years now. It's had a number of eruptions every 20 or 50 years since the 1800s that we've first observed it, making islands, but they're very temporary and they get eroded away by the waves. But this latest eruption appears to be a bit different in that it's more an effusive style eruption where lava has been erupted at the summit of the volcano, which was sitting about 10, 20 metres below the surface for the last 20 years or so. And so this effusive eruption has produced lava, and it's a much more hardened and more resistant rock. So this island may last for a little bit longer than the previous islands.
Oh, a little bit longer. So how long could it be? How long did the last ones last for?
The last ones only lasted about 6 months or so because they were produced by more explosive eruptions, a bit like what we saw earlier this year with the Hunga Haepai eruption, producing a lot more pumice. And pumice is very light, frothy volcanic material. And because it was very close to sea level, just the piling up all that pumice was able to make these islands, but very, very easily erodible by the waves. And the islands disappeared within about 6 months or so.
And
so the eruption is, the eruption is quite similar to the eruption of Metta's Shoal or Latiki volcano just to the south, which again was more effusive lava building. And those islands were able to last at least decades until the next eruption.
Wow, decades. And so as you said, that this one, the Home Reef volcanic, the recent eruption, does have that more effuse, did you say, lava buildup. So are we expecting this to last decades perhaps?
Quite possibly, yeah. So if it keeps going and keeps growing the island and making it bigger, then it's got more chance to survive the wave action. But at this stage, it certainly has the potential to last for at least years. The Metta's Shoal eruption had an island, but then the new eruption basically destroyed the island. So they can destroy themselves or they can build themselves up as well.
Wow, that's quite exciting. I mean, if it does last for decades, as you're suggesting, it could happen, which I guess it's still a bit too early. I mean, can we see life on it? Can we see plants? And, you know, could one day we even visit it and live there?
Probably wouldn't want to live there, being on an active volcano. but certainly it's amazing how quickly life can take hold of new land surfaces. So as long as the island persists and stays emergent, then yeah, birds will probably start to land, the seabirds and nest and rook. And then, yes, sort of plants can start to take a hold. And as long as the island continues to build and grow itself like Latte just to the north, which is a nice big island, then, yes, we can certainly see life start to take hold on this island as well.
Oh, right. Yes, you did say it was an active volcano. I mean, I understand that Tongan authorities have actually placed that area under a restriction zone and told people not to go too close to it. Is that because it might erupt again?
Well, it's sort of still continuing to erupt as far as we can tell in the satellite images. It's still steaming. So these eruptions are generally quite quiet, if you like, and not too energetic. But the danger is when we have hot magma come into contact with water, that we can get very explosive styles of eruption, which we saw to tremendous effect earlier this year at the Hunga Haepai volcano. So as long as it's allowed to erupt normally, it shouldn't be too dangerous, but there's always this potential for explosions with the contact with the water. And then there'll be the gas emissions as well. There'll be a lot of sulfur gas emissions, which are pretty unpleasant. So there'll be an advisory to keep away. And then also aviation needs to be aware of any ash that might be ejected into the air from these explosions.
The Hunga Haepai volcanic eruption, which devastated many islands there in Tonga, it was one of the largest ever recorded, in fact. And then this one, is the activity linked? Are we noticing any trends of increased activity in the region?
Again, our window of observation is fairly brief. You know, really, the last couple hundred years would need a much longer period of observation to have any confidence about any increase in activity. But from what we can see, every 5 years or so, we are getting eruptions from volcanoes in this area. So it's interesting, we've had two eruptions this year, but like I said, in 2019, we had two volcanoes erupting as well, so it's not unusual.
Professor Scott Bryan from the School of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences at Queensland University of Technology, speaking there to Priyanka Srinivasan. And that's it from Pacific Review. I'm Evan Wasuka. Thank you for listening, and do join us again at the same time next week for more news and views from around the Pacific.